Well, there's something going on up there. I don't know what it is. I have my suspicions. We'll be back with more with Wilbur Allen, your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Wilbur Allen with us. Wilbur, tell me why you have this possible thought of an underground alien base in Washington, D.C.
Well, from some of the samples that I've taken, for example, I did a reshoot of the Capitol building in 2009. And I photographed some very unusual anomalies, which came out of the ground and flew through the solid statues that were in the samples. So with the ability to go through solid matter, it's quite logical for these objects to have a base somewhere else and pass through solid matter.
There are some who will say that what we are witnessing are demonic, that they're just not good. But they are very demonic, almost, you know, biblically so. Would you even consider that as a possibility?
I can't, because none of the encounters that I photographed, none of the encounters that I experienced as a child were hostile or violent.
Well, that's an important issue.
Absolutely. Other than what scared me was their physical attributes, how they looked, there was nothing hostile there. It was my fear versus something that was unknown in my presence that I just did not understand.
Is the abduction of Wilbur Allen continuing?
Yes.
Same way?
Again, with the transporter technology, yes.
Okay. And have you been able, at this point, to describe what you are looking at inside this craft?
No.
Or wherever you might be?
Always very limited and very limited to what I see. An interesting thing, again, is that I would be there and only see myself and not see where the light source is that's coming from that's illuminating me.
Don't they share anything with you, though? Like, this is where we're from. This is our propulsion system. None of that.
None of that.
Huh.
Other than the photographs.
Well, they gave Betty and Barney Hill a little more information than they've given you.
Well, I'm not really sure what they've given me because... for example, some of the technology that I created in photography, I never technically studied photography at that level. And one of the things that I created in Los Angeles was a device that utilized low voltage radiation to process the film. And in the process, I generated images that were essentially full color night vision. But that information and how I got to that point to come to that technology, I could only conclude that it was downloaded into me.
You know, because you're a technically minded person, I've got to ask you this question. I was taken on top of a building in California a couple of years ago by a fellow by the name of Ed Grimsley. Have you met Ed?
I believe I've met
Ed. He's got the night vision goggles, third generation.
Yes.
And he claims that there's some kind of war going on up there between ETs, maybe even us. But he said, George, you got to come up here. Well, he had been bugging me, Wilbur, for years. I first met him when I was at a conference, and unlike you, where you meet me while I'm leaving, and, you know, you're polite, Ed was polite, but he's following me around in this with this paper bag. And after that, you know, security and people start looking at this guy, and they're going, who is this person? What's in his bag? So, you know, at some point, you know, he reaches into his bag, not a good sign, right? And he pulls out his night vision goggles, and everybody had a sigh of relief. But after the second or third time meeting him at these events, he said, you got to look at this thing. So I finally went up there with him and a group of people. And he said, now look, this is what you're going to see. Take a look in this area. And I did. And I'm telling you, I saw two objects making 90-degree turns. They must have been 100 or 200 miles up there. And clearly not a satellite. Satellites don't stop and make a right-hand turn.
Nor can a human take that kind of G-force.
No, not at all. They weren't insects. I don't know what they were, Wilbur, but let me tell you, they weren't from this planet. I'll tell you that. And what can you conclude by that other than, like you, it's got to be extraterrestrial?
Well, you know, at some point in my research, and I started utilizing other people, and Stanton Friedman was one of the people that was influential in helping me do the level of research that I have been doing with these UFOs I encountered. but he recommended that I do a subtractive analysis. And in doing a subtractive analysis, what it is, you say, okay, we know what it is not. And after you've gone through this entire list of what it is not, then it could only be unknown or extraterrestrial. And there is no technology that I can think of, especially in with the military when I came up and all the military bases that I lived on, and I was exposed to some rather advanced technology, but nothing quite like what I've encountered with these anomalies that I photographed. Nothing at all.
And I can't get you to speculate, can I?
I can't speculate, because therefore it would be illogical for me to form a conclusion to something that is unknown.
Okay, let's take some calls. Let's go to William in Desert Hot Springs, California, west of the Rockies. William, stories, questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, nice to talk to you, George.
You too.
I enjoy your program very much. Listen to you.
Thank you.
I want to say that I'm a retired Air Force sergeant, and I had 15 years in electronics experience, so I'm quite technical.
Okay, and thank you for serving.
Thank you. Thanks. And the last 7 years I was in, I flew as a gunner on the B-52, the tail gunner.
Sure, yeah.
Where I flew anywhere from 8 to 16 hours a day, sitting back there just looking at the floor on the fauna.
Yeah.
And we were flying times on our bomb mission, bomb runs, we were flying like 300 or 400 feet off the ground, up in practice bomb runs up in Montana and up that area. So you could see very good on the ground. In fact, I saw a big herd of elk on the ground once from the plane.
And the Memphis Belle in World War II, they were B-17s, weren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
The B-52 is that big, big swept-wing bomber.
Yeah. They used those in Vietnam. My father was one of the engineers on B-52s.
Was he really?
Yes.
I probably ran into him somewhere.
At Clark, more than likely.
All right, go ahead with your story, William.
Air Force is a small place. Anyway, so for the last 5 years I was in as a gunner, and I didn't sleep like most of them. I always liked to look out and see what I could see. And then when I got out of the Air Force, I got on this, it was a project a couple years later, that put the first PCS network in the Washington, D.C. area. And the PCS is the little, you call it cell phone probably, but the phone that you use every day.
Sure, okay.
We were putting into base stations for those all and switching center all around Washington and all up through Baltimore. It was the first project in the country. Ericsson was the power and the money behind it.
Yeah.
But at any rate, we were up on those roofs 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and there was, you know, probably 40, 50, 60 guys that are up there in the towers. I never heard anybody say they'd seen anything like a UFO. And I was looking, and I didn't see anything like a UFO. And, you know, I don't know what to think. Am I looking in the wrong place? Or maybe my little thing in the neck isn't implanted, or what? I'd love to see one. And if he could give me any tips, I'd certainly like to try them out one day.
Well, I guess, Wilbur, you have to be in the right place at the right time.
It would help to be in the right place in the right time. And I can't give a person any idea on how to go out and take UFO photographs, because it's like random probability playing the numbers or winning the jackpot in Vegas. It's impossible for you to just say, okay, be here at a certain time and do that without necessarily the aid of an external force. And that is the only reason that I can explain that I get these specific photographs on my website.
William, thanks for your call. It's almost like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where they were basically in communication. They knew when these objects were going to appear, and they were there waiting for them.
It's exactly how it is. And in some cases, for example, in some of the areas in England where they have crop circles, the areas where these crop circles are generated, villagers would send out a thought, and that thought would manifest into a crop circle. Obviously, these intelligences are reading the minds of humans, We're transmitters. Yeah. We send out a signal.
Have you ever, William, gotten to the point where you just wanted to say, or maybe you have, stop. I'm tired of this. I don't want to hear this voice anymore. I'm done.
No, I can't say that. It's in fact, it's the opposite. I'm saying, give me more and let it be more abstract. And I'm also saying, let me go inside and take a picture.
How much leeway do you get before they tell you something's coming, go take a picture?
It's almost spontaneous. It just happens.
And you live out in the D.C. area, don't you?
I live 6 blocks from the White House.
So you're at their beck and call.
Yes.
Interesting. Let's go to Alicia in Portland, Oregon. Alicia, how are you?
Hi, George. How are you? I'm great.
Good.
I just wanted to let your guests know that about a local access public cable channel here in Portland that I was viewing about 4 years ago, and this lady was on there, and she was talking about the same scenes, the same images, everything as your guest, and how they've been in control of her as far back as she could remember, and her house arrest monitor BB was located and planted in her right bottom molar, and she said it took her many, many years to find a dentist that would agree to have it to take it out, but it kept breaking the drill bits. She had taken out, and she had taken it to a port up at OHSU, and had it analyzed, and it was of no substance that anybody could.
Oh, they can't figure it out, can they?
But she said that there's also a few other people, because she was institutionalized too. They thought she was crazy, and they finally let her, got her out. Several. She spent like 15 years there. She learned that there was others out there all over the world. She said really, really few in numbers, and she said that they collaborate over the internet. And they don't have, like, you know, conferences, seminars, or meeting, anything like that. She said, I don't remember what the name was that she said to Google in, but she said she searched, you will find the name of them. And she said that it was there. She got it. I don't know where she got the information from. I guess from them. She belongs to them. She's one of them, although they erased her memory. And it's like a tracking device. And I think, I don't know if it's so she doesn't get lost or what, but she's kind of gathering information for them. And it was some sort of deal she made before she got to Earth.
We have to track her down.
If you get on tape, just go to Portland Access, Cable Access, and it's down on Main Street in Oregon City, and they probably have copies of it.
All right, I will do that. Thanks, Alicia. How many people do you think, Wilbur, are out there like you? Not necessarily photographers, but people who have been summoned.
Quite a few.
For different purposes.
Quite a few. And it's interesting that most people who do discover that they have these implants want to have them removed. And it's interesting also the response that most people have that when they find out that they're basically tagged by these extraterrestrials, that they become psychologically and emotionally unstable. And that is not necessarily the case with some of us. And I have to say that I think that it's an enlightening experience to witness these things and to photograph them is even more. And I tell my friends I basically won the weird lottery when I come up with these samples.
What I also find interesting is so many people who are witnessing these things are still being accused of being whacked out.
Well, that's the problem of an unintelligent mind, because most people who are unable to accept information, especially information of the unknown, they have problems. You know, and that is an issue with some of the individuals that I deal with here at the university that I was attending. They were not willing to accept information outside the box. They're so used to being on this track and doing these things a certain way, and that's the only way it's done, and that's all they care about.
How do you know that you're not and haven't been since you were five part of a government program and they're just monitoring and testing you? So they're the ones who abducted you. They're the ones that planted this device in you. It's some guy in a van talking into a microphone.
Unless those guys had silver spacesuits and pencil-thin bodies, then I would agree with that. But what I saw, these were not of human design.
And that, of course, is the big picture.
Absolutely.
Next up, we go to our first-time caller in California, Sydney. Hey, Sydney, welcome to the show.
How you doing, George?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
I've been knowing you. See, I've been trying to reach you for the last 2 years, guy.
Well, you made it. That's effort. Let me tell you. You deserve it.
I've been trying for 2 years. I need to tell you something real quick. Listen, I was in Vegas for 15 years. I worked with the Insulators Union and the International Laborers Union.
Okay.
There. We was doing some work at McCarran Airport before to get it ready for the year 2000. And so me and my old lady broke up. The guy said, well, you guys ain't going to stay together after 8 years, you know. He said, don't bring your wife up here to Vegas. And I should have not have. So when we broke up, I was just out there. She took all the money, and I was walking down, the strip. The strip goes south and north. Then when you get to Bob's Tupac's, then it turns east and west. And then you go all the way down to where you get to the Golden Nugget, then to the Silver Nugget. And I was coming from the Silver Nugget from that base over there, off of Lake Mead.
Sure.
I was coming through Lake Mead. You got, it runs into Lake Mead, and then you got Main Street. I was coming up Main Street. You pass Lake Mead. You go up to Owens, and everything was lit up. So I stopped at the 7-Eleven right there on the corner of the Strip and Main Street, and there was a 7-Eleven right there. And I said, well, I only had a dollar or something on me, so I bought a 22-ounce. It was like 22 ounces of beer, you know, in a bottle.
She took everything from you, huh?
Took everything. So I was trying to keep warm because it was cold. And I had a T-shirt on. I was so mad at her. I was just so damn angry. So I was just talking to myself. And when you walk through, when you go down Main Street, that's where all the homeless people are. You pass by the Salvation Army.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You pass by the grave site. You pass by a St. Vincent. All that stuff there. It was lit up. And after I pass Owens and get to Washington, from Washington to Bonanza, there's a liquor store right there. Not a liquor store. It's like a nightclub or a bar. No, it's a bar right there on the corner of Bonanza and Main Street before you get to Park and Union Station. Right when I come through, everything is dark. When I come through there, I'm saying, damn. And no cars came through the whole area. I'm like, what the hell? So I just kept walking. I'm mad talking to myself, just angry. But no cars coming through the area. I get through there, and as I get in the middle of between Washington and Bonanza, Bonanza is going south, no, it's going east and west. And I'm damn near on the west side where all the homeless and the blacks live and all that stuff. And I'm coming through there, and man, there's something. I look up on top of the building, there's a Salvation Army right there on that corner. There's a Salvation Army warehouse. And on top of the building, I look up there, and there's a guy. There's a ship up there.
What do you mean a ship? Like a UFO?
There's a UFO up there, okay? Half of it is silver, and the other dome of it, the top dome is clear glass, like. And this guy is in a suit, and he's got a suit like you went to the moon or someplace. And I could see his face, and his face was so red, and he was so angry, and he was putting these boxes.
Hold on for a second, Sydney. I want you to finish that story when we come back. Now, it is Vegas, but you never know. We'll be back. We'll go back to Sydney Wilbur in California. So, Sydney, when you were in Vegas, you look up the top of the Salvation Army building. There's a craft and a guy up there or somebody. Go ahead.
And he's putting crates. It looked like he's putting some wood boxes. I used to come through that area all the time because there was homeless people there. So I would always donate stuff to the homeless people rather than give it to the churches. So I knew the people in that area. Right behind it, right where the bar is, there's a across the street, there's a used furniture shop. And then right there where the bar is, that's going west on Main. And then there's a secondhand place there. Then there's a place for battered women and their children. And there was this black guy who was over that. And he was like a preacher or something like that. And he had this little home there, this little church there or whatever. And then there was some motels, for rundown motels that was there. And there was a Hispanic kind of restaurant there in that area.
You sound like you're a Vegas tour guide.
No. I tell you, I learned the area because I learned the area because, listen, my father had been in the military 27 years. He was in World War II when he fought where he shot down Japanese aircraft over there in the Pacific.
Yeah.
My sister, she's a retired full-bearer colonel at the Pentagon. Listen, guy, I don't have to lie to you about anything. I know what I saw. I've been seeing aircraft, spaceships since I was a kid.
Did it take off, or what happened to it?
No, he was loading something in the craft.
But you never saw him launch away or anything.
No. He was loading something in the craft, and then something moved. In my peripheral vision, I was looking up. Something moved. I said, "Oh God!" Once you're in the area, my father always told me never to fear anything, because whatever you encounter, it's going to encounter you anyway. So why fear it? Just handle what you got to handle. And then afterward, then you'd be scared.
Then you can get scared. That's
exactly.
Right.
Then you get scared.
Exactly.
And so I never fear anything because my father taught me since I was a baby, you know. So it's like I never fear anything, but I was nervous. And I said, oh, Lord, I said, what is this? You know, so finally what happened is this. Everything was not moving in that area because they had some kind of frequency that kept every car out the area. But by me being so angry, I offset the frequency.
Yeah, it didn't affect you.
It didn't affect me, so I was able to walk through the area. But once I'm in the area, then there's three other aliens that were in a corralled area. You know how they have, these construction sites where they have those little mobile trailers there where the managers be in, where the project managers be inside and all that. Well, they had one of those, and they had a gate that rose, and there was three aliens right there. And I kept seeing it. I noticed something move, and my peripheral vision caught it on a telephone pole. And I said, something moved. I looked up there, but everything looked like the telephone pole. And so then I turned my head away, and it moved again. I said, damn it. So I turned my head away, and I went back, and I caught it. And it was on top of the telephone pole. There was some security. I mean, the technology was so advanced, it blended into the pole.
And you didn't see any troops around or anything like that?
No, they don't need no troops because this damn thing was, he blended into the telephone pole. He moved 180 degrees just so fast. He was like, poof, poof, like that. And he was hooked up to the transformer because I worked at the power plants up there. At Moapa, Sunrise, all of the Clark Station. I worked at all the power plants.
Wilbur, have you heard anything like this?
You know, it's consistent with samples that I have here, things that are there and then suddenly they're not. I'm also getting reports from people telling me that they've encountered entities, beings with the physical description of humans and ships that fly by. It's consistent with everything that I'm getting here. Absolutely.
What do they want, Wilbur?
Again, I can't tell you, but one of the things you must know for a fact that they're making their presence known. And it's obvious with all the physical samples that's coming out. And it's ironic that this year there are more physical samples of airborne anomalies than any other year ever.
Well, that's true, too. And you're getting these kinds of reports, I mean, all over the country?
I'm getting people telling me stories consistent with that which I encountered as a child. Extraterrestrials seem to be interested in the children more than the adults, and it's all consistent.
Does it make you think that there's something afoot here, something big is about to happen?
There is a possibility something big is happening. There's also the possibility they're trying to integrate their culture and technology into ours through us. I mean, there's all kinds of things to consider, but then, too, that would be speculation, and I would not be the person to ask.
All right, next up, let's go to Macomb, Mississippi. We've got Paul, east of the Rockies. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
I want to ask him a question, but I want to kind of build up to it. Back when I was about 6 or 7, I can remember we had a little house in Gulfport, Mississippi. And one night, I couldn't visually see, but in my mind's eye, I guess, I could see 3 or 4 little people outside the window, kind of moving around, trying to get a better look in the window. And I just cover up. And then I'd feel like that I was, like the bed would turn upside down, which the bed didn't move, but it felt like I didn't know anything about levitation back then, but it felt like I was going to fall up off of the bed. So I'd reach over and grab both sides of the mattress.
You know that feeling,
Wilbur. Consistent. And the next thing I would know, it would be morning. And that happened for a couple of years, I guess. But I never remember seeing anything. Seemed like I remember one time that I was walking around in some type of like spaceship or something in a curved hall, but I never did see anything or anybody. It was just empty. But I noticed after a while that I had something in right behind my right earlobe, about half the size of a pencil eraser. And I could move it around with my finger, and I got showing everybody, and they said, oh, that's just an air bubble.
Yeah, right.
So I just accepted that, and then it kind of quit.
The legendary author Whitley Strieber has something behind his ear, too.
Probably. Right behind my right earlobe.
Yeah, almost just like that, Paul.
They like that location for some reason.
Yeah.
When I was 21 or 22, I remember one night, I wasn't sitting on the couch or laying in the bed. I was driving a car, and I pulled out on this two-lane highway headed south, and that's the last thing I remember. It was breaking dawn. I was about a mile further south headed north, and I looked at my gas gauge, which I looked at just before I pulled out on the road because I was kind of running low on gas. It was late at night and all the service stations were closed. And I hadn't burned any gas in that 4 hours. So I don't know where I went, what I did, anything. But I noticed, of course, I've had that spot behind my ear for most of my life.
And it's probably still there, right?
No. After that, I don't know how long it was, but I noticed it was gone.
Just dissolved away?
I don't know. I've still got an indent in my muscle. It's not my skin, but my muscle. I can feel where it was.
But it's gone.
It's gone.
Wilbur, do these things dissolve when they don't need the person anymore?
You know, I've never heard that before, and it may be a possibility that they just unleash you and let you go by removing the tag. It's very possible.
All right, thanks, Paul. Let's go to your neck of the woods, Ray's in Washington, D.C. Go ahead, Raymond.
Yes. I've emailed you a couple times. I'm George, but I guess you get so many emails, I don't know. It's Ray from D.C., but anyway.
Well, I don't respond to all of them, Ray. I look at them all, so.
No, okay. Well, I can imagine that. I wanted to know if your guest tonight, I've had a couple experiences myself, and maybe if you have a couple minutes, I could go over that, but I wanted to ask this, Wilbur Allen, if he's ever met Robert Stanley, covert encounters in Washington, D.C.
Robert is my good friend and business partner, yes.
Oh, my God, because I just got the book downtown. I'm in Washington, D.C., too. I'm a Mr. Allen. And I just got his book, and I was fascinated by that because he was just on your show, George.
Yes, he was. Absolutely.
Yeah. Back in the 1950s, I was raised in Mount Rainier, Maryland, where they actually, strangely enough, in 1947, that's where the exorcists were supposed to happen with that 12-year-old boy that was, taken over by the devil. But
yeah.
We moved there it was 1953. This was about the mid-50s. I was looking out of my back window on a house there in Mount Rainier, Maryland. I see this craft come up over the treetops, completely silent, going around with different colored lights. You could see this structure, and then, of course, it just went up over the house and disappeared. And then some years later, in 1967, right across the street from where I was raised, there was something was motivating. It felt like this pulsating thing right behind the window. And I don't know if this sounds familiar to you, but it was something that was a little bit sickening. It was a pulsating kind of machine that was right behind the window. And I was talking to this girl. It was kind of a strange day, that whole day in 1967. She was a childhood friend, and we looked at each other. We both got up on the couch and turned around and looked, and there was this sort of tall cylinder thing just pulsating, and then this light went up, and she looked out the front window and said it looked like the outline of an invisible man, and I ran over her baby. I had never been so frightened and scared in my life. My heart was pounding like right out of my head. And this was in 1967. I'm 66 years old now, so, but I'll never forget those two experiences. Does that make any sense to you, Mr. Allen? Does it sound
any familiar? They're using cloaking technology, and it's consistent with everything that I'm encountering.
It was the most frightening experience I've ever had in my life. I'll never forget my heart pounding. I felt it was going to come right
it's
out of my body.
It's something you'll never forget, and you'll more than likely dream about it.
Yes. Yes.
All right, there you go. Yeah, Robert Stanley was a great guest for us, by the way.
Robert,
yes, that was a great show.
He was, indeed. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. You never know when you're going to get that voice, that call, do you?
I do not know, and it. Sometimes I get it and I ignore it because, again, I'm getting so much of this stuff, I just simply don't want to see it.
Absolutely. Have you sent images to many people like Hoagland and folks like that to analyze
Richard,
this?
Richard has samples. In fact, one of the samples I sent Richard was a photograph that my father took from a hill over Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, and it showed two luminous anomalies in the air over the base. And interestingly, that was only one frame that my father took of UFOs that he would ever even talk about. But yeah, I shared material with
this
Richard.
This is a small world, because Richard has said that those images, not knowing at that time they came from you and your father, were absolutely amazing.
Yes.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line in Boulder, Colorado. David's up with us. Go ahead, David.
Oh, yeah. Good evening.
Hey.
Hey, yeah, I am so happy that you guys are talking about this. I'd just like to mention what happened to me when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
I thought I was sleeping, but I felt like I was awake. I couldn't move my body, and there were people all around me, but all I could see is silhouettes and a bright light. And then I heard this, saw this one silhouette coming down towards my face with his hands, and I heard this incredibly loud snap, and that woke me up almost. I still couldn't open my eyes. I couldn't move my body. And so one of those silhouettes grabbed my arm, picked me up, and I started pushing, trying to get away. And when I looked over to the it looked like an exit, but it looked like more like a hall. It was kind of domed out. And I saw this thing that looked like an insect. And it was really tall and disgusting and ugly looking, and it was horrifying. And then the next thing I know, I woke up. And I ran out of my room, ran out, told my mom right away what happened. And she said I had a bad dream, and then my brother came out because of the commotion. And I said, you know, and I kept telling her this was what happened. It's so scary. I was shaking. I was pale. And then my brother told me that my nose was bleeding. And I put my hand there, touched it. There was blood all over my hand. I ran in. That's where I felt that pop, right into my nose. And then I just started shaking and slammed the door, locked it. I was just shaking, rocking back and forth, shaking and wiping the blood off my nose. And anyway, all of a sudden I started feeling a little better. I didn't talk to my mom about it because she thought I was nuts. And then a week later, my dad brought me and my friend and my brother to Carr Canyon in Arizona to watch the eclipse of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all laying there drinking coffee and hot chocolate. And when the moon was finally eclipsed, I saw it looked like a star. And it was shooting in all these different directions, back and forth. It looks like it went 10,000 miles an hour, stop, 10,000 miles an hour, stop. It was amazing. I was showing my brother. I told my dad. I said, look, they saw that. And ever since then, I've had this urge to invent things, to film UFOs. I've been filming UFOs since 1998.
Interesting.
Nonstop. And I use I kind of block out the sun and focus out on the clouds, and I'll get these white objects that move in geometrical, you know what I mean, formation.
Consistent.
Left,
all
right.
Consistent.
Yeah. And since then, it's nonstop urge wanting to do this. I had a dream. I don't know if it was a dream, but I was in a ship with somebody behind me, and I couldn't see him, but he was showing me the planets. And that was the most vivid colors I've ever seen in my life, even more vivid than what we see here now. And it was amazing looking. I just couldn't believe it. And I got information from one saying that they're experimenting in our planet, and they're coming, and they're experimenting with their propulsion devices, and they separate them from their ships, and then once they're all, you know, working fine, they put them actually back in their ships, they're preparing to come here.
That's great information. And David, the fact that you can talk about it and share that with other people on this show specifically,
yeah,
how does that make you feel?
Much better, because I don't tell anybody. I don't tell anybody at all. It's pretty frightening. I mean, after that happened with that nose thing, I lost one third of my school year. I had to stay home because my eye was constantly tearing. It was red. I kept sneezing.
Oh my gosh!
I had to stand about one third of the year out of school.
And then it went away.
Then I went to the doctor, and they took an X-ray, and I have a little nodule right between my eye, corner of my eye, and my nose.
Like an implant.
Yeah, and they said that they were thinking about taking it out. Thought maybe that was causing the problems, and another doctor came in and said that we couldn't do that. It would I'd die. They did that.
You no die?
Way. Yeah.
They put them where technically you can't get access to them because we don't have that level of technology in medicine yet.
But I don't think they want to hurt you. But I guess they just don't want anybody to tamper with it.
They don't want you to get access to it.
My God, you think they would tell you? You could die if this is taken out.
Well, the reaction I got in the hospital at Sculthorpe Air Force Base in the UK was excruciating pain, almost as if a charge of electricity was being charged through my body.
If you want to take a look at some of the objects that Wilbur has taken photographs of, you can go to his website, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you driving around, just remember UFODC.com. It's simple as that. We'll be back in a moment. We hit the top of the hour. We'll come back with a final hour of phone calls, stories, and chats with Wilbur Allen on Coast to Coast AM.